The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence. And now, here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Good evening, listeners. Monday evening. So delighted to be here with you. The folks today, we have Lisa Mullerboot with us. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
So Lisa has worked with hundreds of women, men, and couples. She has worked with countless therapists across the country on how to work with couples, given speeches, taught teleclasses, and advised leaders. And she's passionate about doing her part to help men, women leaders to step up and step into the world in a whole new way. After watching women settle for less than they deserve for most of her life, her work is about helping women step into the world as equals, deserving of great things, most certainly great relationships. So Lisa, as we read about your bio and as we learn more about you, it sounds like you are a great leader. So tell me, going back to your childhood, were you very outgoing and leading the way for other girls or for other kids? Or what were you like as a kid?
What a great question. So when I was younger, I was a tomboy. I was a little tomboy. I was always in sports. And often in most of the sports, I was the leader. I would be the captain of the soccer team or captain of cheerleading squad. So I would lead a lot in athletic activities. I tended to be, if I knew you well, I was outgoing. If I didn't know you, I was a little bit quiet. However, when I was on the field, I would just more naturally lead.
So you were a born leader, and you know, there's so many times when a lot of women think that, oh, either you're a born leader or you're not a born leader. So as far as I'm concerned, that's a myth. Yes, you can be a natural leader, and yet you can become a leader as you grow. So what are your thoughts on that?
I totally agree. I don't think that you have to be a born leader. I think there are so many ways that you can go into leadership. I was definitely a more natural leader in sports. And I don't know that I would say that necessarily in my day-to-day life growing up. I was the youngest of five. So being the youngest of five, you can easily get lost in the in the crowd a little bit. So I don't think that you have to be a natural born leader in order to later in life become a very skilled leader. I think you have to be mindful and be clear about what you're going about and what your values are and what you're hoping to create. And then I think there are definitely many opportunities for you to kind of cultivate those skills if you don't naturally have them.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right on that. So when you were a kid, was there someone who really influenced you? And I would like to invite you to think back and see, you know, if it was a woman that influenced you without, you know, telling you anything just by being her.
You know, it's interesting. I would say I'm more, when I was younger, I was more motivated by what I didn't like to, so in my family of origin, I didn't like how my parents were, and that motivated me to start working for women later in life. When I was, as I got older, there were, you know, many role models. Maya Angelou is just probably one of everybody's, right? She was one of the biggest ones. And now Michelle Obama. But when I was younger, I don't even think that my head was even in that place. I was kind of just going around with no direction, really, I would say for a long time. Other than, like I said, I knew I didn't like what was, there were pieces in my family that I didn't like that I wanted to change. And I think that that really sparked a fire in me in terms of working with women and couples later on.
So, and you can decline to answer this question, but what brings the question is that, you know, you mentioned that there were things that you did not like in your family. Would you be open to sharing?
Sure. So my parents were definitely a more traditional marriage, and back then I think it was much more common. Well, no, I shouldn't say it's more common. Anyway, back then my father could his anger could go from 0 to 100 in the blink of an eye. And when he got really angry, I remember just watching all five kids, all of us would cower, and I also and my mom would grow silent. And it really, I hated that all of us would walk on eggshells around his anger. And I hated that my mom wouldn't call him out on it because, one, back then women just didn't. That's one of the things. And two, had she called him out on it, he just would have become more angry. And I wish that that she had. I wish that she had stepped up. And I wish that my father had control of his anger, and he didn't lead like I believe my father led. Like I see many men leading, even still today, is they lead with a bullying kind of aggressive power over paradigm. And I watched too many women all through my years growing up, all through my training. Today, I have countless clients who come in and where I see women shrink and men bully. And I watched that growing up and I watch it now. And that has really been the trigger for me, the catalyst for me to start doing this work, because I think men and women both really lose out on that. And certainly the five of us children lose out. And I think children of all ages across all, you know, across everywhere lose out when that's what they're seeing.
Absolutely. And I like what you said that, you know, that was your fuel for and your determination that got fueled by what you saw. And so many times what happens is that it's that cycle, right? That's never broken and it continues from generation to generation. So this is a really good way and a good example that, yes, something may have been true for your parents at that time. That's the best that they did. But that doesn't mean that cycle cannot be broken. So you talked about that you were into sports. And if you'll share, you know, did you have a mix of siblings and how did you connect with your siblings? Were there any conflicts? So what would you say were the like best things of having siblings? What did you learn? And then what was some things that you would have liked to change?
So there were five. It was girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, which is funny. I loved having a big family. I really enjoyed it. Some of the things that I loved when I was growing up is playing. We played outside all the time, flashlight tag and kick the can and all of those games. And I would say 4 out of the 5 of us often played together. My sister was 8 years older than me, so she was more, she was just a little bit older and wasn't out in the yard with us as much, which she feels sad about now because she was, you know, just older and we were kind of too young for her to play with. But the rest of us, the 4 of us, would often go out and we'd be out all day playing in the neighborhood until my dad's whistle. And then my dad would whistle. And as soon as he whistled, we're all like, okay, we got to go in. So it was just a lot of fun. I miss those days. And I enjoyed like being around the table and we'd all, you know, everybody take their turn talking about how their day was. And there's lively conversation at the dinner table. My mom was a great cook and had dinner for us all the time. So that was a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff in my childhood that I enjoyed. And certainly having a big family was one of them.
Yes. Definitely having a big family is a lot of fun because I remember, you know, we had a very small family. And a couple of my friends had a lot of brothers and sisters, probably like, you know, 4 or 5, like you mentioned. And whenever I went to their house for a play date, there was always hustle and bustle. Like, you know, either somebody was going in, like somebody's friends were there. So it always seemed like a full house, but full of life and all that. And it's so much fun. And one of our listeners and shared that, you know, she also remembers playing good games like that. So if you were to like pull, you mentioned that, you know, those were good memories. What learnings did you take from that family experiences that carried and stayed with you through your teens and for the rest of your life?
Ah, what a great question. So laughter, I think humor, our family liked to laugh a lot and we still do, even in, you know, my mom had a heart attack, several years ago and both of my sisters and I were in the hospital room and with my mom and we just were laughing and the staff was like, oh my gosh, you guys, what are you doing? But so the humor was a lot of fun. It's one of the ways we got through hard times. And so I've taken that with me always. I think that humor in other people is a sign of strength and health. So I love that. Having our family was sarcastic, and so I have to watch with the sarcasm a little bit. And growing up, like that was fun. There was a fun way that we could tease each other and still be playful, and that helped with the relationships. So I would say that I've brought that. There's a lightheartedness to our family that I like to bring into my family today and in my work and just like a playfulness. So I would say those are some of the, you know, the key pieces that I've really tried to hold on to and take with me.
Oh, how fun, because that's something that's really missing in our society today is laughter.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Yes. And I love what you said that you brought that with you as you grew up, because think about it. So many times what happens is, you know, you are in a very difficult situation or even something challenging is happening and there's an adversity, but that one smile or laughing at the situation or learning to laugh at yourself can immediately transcend that adversity. And it doesn't change, but it changes the perspective. So what a beautiful way to move it forward. So as you moved forward, you know, You mentioned that you were in athletics. Did you continue throughout your life? Do you play anything now? And what was your focus in your career and in your college?
So I'm embarrassed to say that I don't play sports now. And I'm embarrassed because, so I did play my, I played sports most, like all through high school. I played in my first year of college. And actually, like looking back now, it was kind of fun. We played in the Final Four. I played for UMass Amherst and we were in the Final Four NCAA championship. So that was fun. And then after that, I stopped. I wanted to just enjoy college and have fun and stopped doing sports. And then when I had children, my husband and I coached my daughter's team. My husband coached my daughter's team and our son's team. And then they got involved in soccer. And so that has been a big part of our lives, you know, forever. My husband still coaches right now. He coaches college and semi-pro. So soccer has been a big, you know, role, but I stopped actually playing. And there's no good reason for me to give you for me stopping playing. I just stopped, you know.
That's okay, because that is one of the things as part of being women. We are very hard on ourselves, and at least you played, you know, you played until you were in Final Four. That's very commendable. And you know the value of sports. And I'm sure you mentioned about kids and your family life. Would you like to share a little bit about that?
What would you like to know?
Are your kids in sports? Have you promoted sports in your family? Have you passed that to them?
Yes, our kids grew up with sports. They played sports all through, you know, growing up through high school. And then our daughter played for her freshman year of college, and then she got injured, so she stopped. And our son did not play in college, but he played like a lot of intramurals and had fun doing that, but neither one of them are doing soccer right now. But for a long, it was a big part of their growing up.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. That's fantastic. Because here's the thing, you know, you don't have to be in sports, like, you know, like traveling sports. So for example, if you're playing basketball, even if you play recreational league, what it does is it brings the respect for sports. And one of the key things that I love about sports is learning how to be a team, learning to drop that I, and understanding that, you know, alone you can go much faster, mm-hmm. but together you can go much further. So that is such a key learning in sports. And of course, you know, physical activity, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, I think there are so many skills that you learn in sports that will help you in your relationships, right? Help you in your life. Like in sports, you have to learn to take criticism. You got to learn to take critical feedback. You have to, you know, learn to partner with others. You have to learn how to give feedback, right? You have to learn, you know, there's so many things that in sports, if you master them, it will help you in business, in your marriage, in your family life, with friends, across the board. I think sports are great, you know, and within it's balance, right? I think everything is balance. And sometimes as a parent, it's a little hard to like, are we putting them too much into sports and not enough doing the other stuff? I know that a lot of parents struggle with that between, you know, sports and activities and homework and, you know, having dinner as a family, all of that is hard to balance. But I do think that there are many, many gifts of sports that people can take with them for the rest of their lives. I know I did. I am.
Oh, yeah, I know. And I just played in recreational. It was nothing major in basketball and softball. And what you learn from it is it's just so much fun.
Right.
And these are the skills you can, especially as you're in professional or even if you are anywhere, regardless, you know, whether you're a domestic engineer or you're in a job, and especially if companies have teams, then you can join that. And by that, you can do networking and become close to people and get to know people like nothing else, because there are leagues even not only in your company may be playing against some other leagues or even like adult leagues that you join.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's such a good place of networking. You're finding like-minded people. So sports, definitely a proponent of it. So Missy's asking question. So nowadays it's like, you know, it's all about sitting these days rather than sports because of computers. And that's true. So do you have any tips how people can involve something more physical during their day-to-day routine?
I think that once you are committed to doing something, that we have to get out of the idea of I need an hour or I need an hour and a half in order to go to the gym or in order to, you know, get on the treadmill or ride a bike. What I've been doing just recently is I need 10 minutes a day in between clients. I've been literally walking up and down my hallway at my office and up and down the stairs so I can at least get 10 minutes in. And it's not much, but I have to like find time to do something. And so I would say if it's a priority, start, even if it's a minute a day at first, or, you know, then you build it up, then you, and do something you like, something you enjoy, something, if you can do some fun activity, do a fun activity. But I think that the excuses we give ourselves, and I know I can speak for myself, the excuses I give are really just excuses. There's always a way to find some time. It's just we have to have that determination and the drive to want to. And then you can get creative about how you do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Some great suggestions there. And one of the things that you mentioned that, you know, you work with women. So there is a different way women lead in comparison to men. How would you compare the two's leadership?
I think by nature, women tend to be more collaborative and they tend to lead more by, they listen, they take in more feedback, they try things out, and versus often I will see men, men feel like they need to make the decisions, they need to know right, you know, what exactly they're going to do, and they tell people often what to do. And that, of course, is not across the board. And I would say that's like the biggest, one of the biggest differences that I see. And I actually would love to see men and women both. Sometimes I see women trying to, and this is not as much now. I would say it's changing more and more. But I know there certainly was a time there where women felt like in order to lead, they had to lead like men. And they would be much sterner than they probably normally would have. And I would like to see men and women both to lead through relationships. And it doesn't mean that you can't make the decisions and you can't be the driver in your organization. However, I think the more you take care of your staff and the more you give them a voice, the better your bottom line. I think that you encourage loyalty and that you have better staff retention. And so I think that that works better when you are actually a more collaborative leader.
Mm-hmm. I really like the word relationships because I will share that I strongly believe that it's not women versus men. It's not about one race against another. It's not about one country against another. It's not about one color against another color. It's not about one generation against another generation. It's about coming together.
Yes.
And I really like what you said about relationships. So here's what I would like to ask you, that, you know, what I've seen is I have worked in Fortune 50 companies. I work with, so, you know, thousands of people across six continents. And one thing that I've noticed, that women collaborate in so many things. So, for example, women will collaborate if you look at the PTA, or, you know, if you have come together even as soccer moms or even as soccer coaches or playing together. There's so many areas, but there are certain areas, especially in corporations, inside the corporations and as you're climbing your ladder, as well as in entrepreneurial area. And I've been in both. I'm not saying that women don't collaborate. They collaborate, but the extent of collaboration is much less than men, because, you know, how they say, a big boys circle, big boys club. Mm-hmm. So similarly, we talk about women's circle and all that, and yet there is not that bond, like, okay, you know what? Let me form my bench. Let me create that circle. Women get offended and hold things against each other for a long time. So since you brought up the relationship, can you go a little bit in depth and share with us why is that?
I believe, I call it the big sham, and the big sham is the intersectionality of gender socialization, patriarchy, and misogyny. And the combination of all three of those take a huge hit on women. From the day we're born, we are told these messages that put women at in competition with one another all the time. And from a young age, we're taught that our worth is in our looks. We're taught that what's more important is getting the attention of men. And so I think that we are often, from like middle school on, we are staring at women, staring girls down, and we're like, look who she thinks she is. She thinks she's so big. And we are raised with this almost like this insecurity about our worth and our value. And that we can't help but act that out everywhere we are, whether it's in our marriages or, you know, in corporate America, in our jobs. And I see that playing out everywhere with women. And it's really, it harms us. It harms us. We talk about, you know, who does she think she is? We badmouth female leaders. We badmouth, you know, employees if we don't like, if we think that they're kind of honing in on our territory. And I think it's a place that all of us have to recognize and take a step back and slow ourselves down and not like judge ourselves around it, however, be aware of it and start changing it. Because I think when we don't think about it, we are already at odds with one another. And that harms all women and it keeps all of us down, which is what we've been set up to do, I believe.
Well, that's definitely a good point, that's what we are set up to do. And this is one of the main reasons why I do this podcast, to have those difficult conversations. Because so many times we just swim at the surface and that's not going to help us. It's really important to go deep down, go take a deep dive and face those difficult moments and difficult conversations. So that said, it again kind of brings us back to that cycle, right? Yes, we can say that society has positioned us to be at odds with one another. So since you're the expert in relationships, it also brings us back to relationships with ourselves. And you said, you know, finding that personal value and worth. Mm-hmm. How can that cycle be broken?
You know, honestly, I think that first and foremost, we have to get conscious of it. We have to notice all the ways it plays out. We have to recognize those, you know, things that we, those messages we say to ourselves. We have to recognize how we talk about other women, how we laugh when other men, when men or other women talk about another woman that we know. And we just like laugh and kind of are complicit with all that. When we set ourselves up in some competitive situation, one of the things I see with women all the time, this is friends. I see this with a lot of college age students. My daughter's in college now, and I'm just watching like friend after friend, all of the girls, they don't have conversations. They get angry with one person and they talk to another friend about it, but they don't talk to that friend about it. They're in a relationship with a, you know, their partner who they're mad at, but they don't talk to their romantic partner to actually work it through. I see this in women, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. They don't have the conversation because they're afraid that either the person's going to get angry or they're going to get reactive to it, or they're not going to, it's going to be mean and they don't want to be mean. So rather than, you know, having a direct conversation, they think saying nothing is kind, but then they act passive aggressive towards them, which is not kind. And so I think like we as women, we have to really watch this. We have to challenge the messages that we are taught every single day, which is be nice, be nurturing, don't make waves, don't make people mad. All those messages kill us in our relationships. They harm us in business. They get us not asking for what we want. They make it hard for us because so many girls don't have these conversations. When somebody dares to have a conversation with us, we struggle with taking in feedback because we see it as mean and we think she shouldn't have said that to me and that's so mean of her. And so instead of working our own boundaries and our own accountability and learning to hear difficult feedback or learning to give difficult feedback, we just tiptoe around it and avoid it. And then we play it out in our actions. And that's harming all of us in every aspect of our life. That's harming all of us. And it does not bode well for creating close friendships with women.
Well said. I really like that. You know, it's about having those conversations. And one of the things I'd like to share is that I have very few mirror friends, and I call these women my mirror friends, as in they're exactly like mirrors. When you're standing in front of a mirror, you know, if you have spinach in your teeth or if you are, if your hair, if it's anything like mine, you know, I've got a whole fuzz on the top of my head, like Kramer. I don't know if you guys have seen Jerry Seinfeld, guys. So yes. It will reflect back. It's going to reflect back what it is. And the key is having that trust in other women who are these friends that, you know, they're going to look out for you no matter what. Mm-hmm. And folks, it's important to be that friend to someone. And having those mirror friends so that when they tell you, you know, they're coming from a place where they wish you well and they want you to grow and they want you to succeed. And when that's there, and folks, it hurts. It hurts when they tell you what's wrong with you and it's okay. Mm-hmm. Because without knowing your blind spots, how can one succeed? So
I couldn't agree more with what you're saying on that. I love that. Yeah. Because I believe that feedback is a gift and it's not mean. It's not harmful. It's a gift. It allows me to see what I wouldn't otherwise see. And then I can actually grow. I can choose to, okay, I got to hear that feedback and this is something I need to work on. But if you don't tell me, there's nothing I can do.
Mm-hmm. And feedback can be given in a way that does not hurt somebody. Do you have any thoughts on that? How to give constructive feedback and not a poisonous feedback where you're pulling somebody down and shredding them to pieces.
Right. So the first thing I would say is that whatever you speak, you want to speak it clean. So speak it clean means that it's respectful, that it is, you're not saying you, right? It's I feel, or I was thinking, or hey, I have feedback for you. Are you open to hearing it, right? Here's what I'm noticing. And that it has clean energy. And the energy is probably one of the most important aspects of telling, giving somebody feedback or having any conversation. And what I mean by clean energy is you can't, there can be no contempt. You can't have the energy of contempt or disgust or looking down your nose at somebody or thinking of them as less than you. And so any type of feedback, you can be angry with somebody and give them feedback from a place that is clean, right? Or you can give somebody hard feedback and you can give that with love and compassion, and it might still be hard for them to hear, but it's coming from a good place. So one, I would clean up your words, how you say it, and I would clean up your energy in terms of what's driving you saying this. Like, are you mad at them and you're angry? If that's the case, you got to wait and cool off and be able to speak to them from a clean place, from a grounded place. With feedback, you want to think, you know, what is this feedback about? Is it about something that they did to you? And if that's the case, Marie's asking, how can you do this without emotions getting in the way? Great question, Marie. So what I would say is, first, ground yourself. And grounding yourself means just pause. If you're heated about something, take a deep breath, slow yourself down, and then think, okay, what is it that I need to speak? So once you get yourself grounded, and remind yourself that you are absolutely equal to this person. You're not better than them. You're not less than them. And then you want to say something. So you're going to say, you could do a feedback wheel, which is when you did dot, dot, dot. What I made up about that is, so when you snapped at me, what I made up about that is that you don't care how you speak to me. And then the next line is about that I feel. So about that I feel hurt and angry. And the last line is what I would like. And what I would like is for you to speak to me in a respectful way, and I'm happy to have that conversation. Or you can just make a direct request. So if somebody's snapping at you, you can just say to them, you can do a couple things. One, you can hold up a mirror, which is you're yelling at me or you're snapping at me. And then you can make a request, lower your tone or don't snap at me, right? If it's something where you were really hurt, then you're going to say, you know, and you might have to calm down. You might need to settle down. Maybe you're going to need to wait a day. And then you come back and say, I want to talk about what happened last night. Last night when you said dot, 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 that really hurt my feelings. That's not how I want our relationship to go. That doesn't work for me. And what I would like is I want an apology or I want an agreement. And so first you got to get clarity about what is it? What's the issue at hand? What upset you? How did it impact you? And what do you want? What do you want from it? But I would say more than anything, the most important part about communication is realizing that you are responsible for speaking it clean, even if they were off. So the poor behavior of somebody else is not a green light for your own. So even if they were off, you still are responsible for speaking it clean. And then the second part is you are only responsible for your side of the equation. So it's hard enough for us to get ourselves grounded so that we can speak it clean. We can't also do the other person's work in terms of how they hear it and how they respond. So when you have something to say to somebody, you only need to worry about how what you do and how you speak it. Don't worry about their reactions or how they're going to take it. That's their work. And if they lose it and they get really reactive, but you know that you were clean, you were good on your end. You were good on your end. Sometimes no matter how well you say something, the person on the other side is going to be in boundary failure and they're going to get reactive. And that's okay. That's not your work. That's their work.
Some great tips. And that emotions getting in the way. So one of the check that I have experienced with myself and in my experience with the folks that I've coached is also knowing yourself, is recognizing, are my emotions running high at this time? Mm-hmm. And if they are, then it may not be the right time. Like you said, wait for a day. It may not be the right time to have that conversation. And also going into that conversation with an expectation where you're open, where somebody may not be ready to apologize. They may have a different perspective. And knowing, like, you know, what's going to be your next step? That if they don't, are you going to break off that relationship? So one of also the key things is, you know, as you mentioned, is staying in the moment and bringing that mindfulness in there that they may not be ready. So at one point you are letting them become aware that, you know, what they said and the behavior was not right, but without judgment. So I really like that, you know, that it does not give you the green signal to move forward and just speak the way they spoke. So it's about like taking that high road, and it's hard. It's very hard. So right. When we talk about emotions, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that with women, you want to come in with a matter of fact message, just a matter of fact strength. Don't be wishy-washy. Don't be like, will you please, like, don't water down your message. And also don't be aggressive about it. It's really a clean, matter-of-fact strength, grounded, powerful strength, and just state it. This is what I want. This is what's going on. And don't be wishy-washy or over the top. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. It was just a line of thought. And it's what you said is like really good, that it's important to find that balance between. And that's, folks, that's one of the toughest parts we as women face, that on one hand, you have this expectation, guys are expected to be tough. And let me share with you, you know, I've coached some fine men who don't want to be rough and tough. And then it's as hard for them because, you know, that's, of course, the expectation. Mm-hmm. And finding that beautiful balance between being rough and tough as well as being not rough and tough and just having your own set of leadership, folks. And that also, like, you know, if somebody can be tough, that's okay, but that's who you are. It's staying true to your values and being authentic and not losing your message. So that was really good what you added. Right. So can you share with us about your book and where we can find the book and your contact information?
So the book is The Rising, A Revolution for Women, and it's on Amazon. It's a Kindle book. The paperback is not out yet, so the Kindle is out, and it's about if women want to change the world for women, then we have to change how we're walking in it. So often we want men to change and the world to change and the government to change and et cetera, et cetera. And really, if we hope to change patriarchy, if we hope to be seen as equals, if we hope to, you know, have our voices heard, we have to change how we're walking in it, because in 1,000 ways we keep ourselves down and we have to stop that. And so that's what the book is about. And you can also, I have, my website is lisamerlobooth.com or therising.com, either one. And yeah, that's where you can get me.
No, that's lovely. And we're nearing to the end of the show. And what I would like to ask you is that if you were to share with women some 2 to 3 top tips that they can take and implement in their lives straight away, what might those be?
So one would be find your voice. You have to speak it. You have to speak it. Stop all the thousands of ways that you convince yourself that it's not important to speak. I want you to say what you mean what you say. The other piece is when there is something that is upsetting, don't confuse a threat with a limit. And the difference between a threat and a limit is follow through. If you're not going to follow through on what you say, don't say it. It's better not to threaten it. So if you are thinking of leaving your marriage, but you're not ready to leave it yet, don't tell them you're going to leave it. You want to have an honest conversation like, I'm really unhappy in this marriage and we need to get help. And if we don't get help, I don't know where it's going to go. But if you say, if you don't change, I'm leaving, and then you don't leave, then you're teaching them to not listen to you. So the other one would be don't confuse strength with aggression. Get grounded, not aggressive, and step in that world as an equal in everything you say or do. So that grounded, powerful strength, don't get overreactive, don't get underreactive, just come in clean and watch that. Stop excusing your cowering and your silencing, or excusing your raging and reactivity. Find the middle.
That's great. Finding the middle. And thank you, Lisa, for being open to having a open conversation, because so many times what happens is that we shy away from difficult conversations, folks. And it's really important to have difficult conversations, because it's something that needs to be done, and sometimes our feelings may get hurt, but the key is that, you know, we're speaking the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as you said, Lisa, it's about speaking the truth in a way that does not hurt somebody, and it still shows them in a factual way without any judgment. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thank you, audience, for being engaged and being part of our family. We really wish you success. And if there is anything that we can help you with, please reach out to us at contact@divyaparekh.com. Reach out to Lisa and ask questions. Sometimes speaking up, having conversations, asking questions can bring us closer to the life that we want to live. And thank you, Rebel, for making the show possible. And until next Monday, take care and be brilliant.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.divyaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.